Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Ross. Now, a lot of business owners come from the technician side and learning, how to kind of handle everything that the bays can throw at them, but sometimes have a little difficulty in making that transition to ownership. They do it, they plug along, but are often left wondering which direction to go, how to handle situations, and they don't necessarily have that experience right at hand. So enter the business coach. So with me today is Brad Bauman of Fleet Auto Services in St. Clements, Ontario, which is just outside of Waterloo. Two locations there. And of course, the coach, Murray Voth from RPM Training, intrepid Indie Garage contributor and a regular on this podcast. Welcome both.
Hey, Andrew. Thank you, Andrew. Hey, Brad.
Yeah, so again, it's Auto Fleet Services, not Fleet Auto.
All right, there we go.
But, Brad, tell me a little bit what your background is in getting into this business, and then we'll see where Murray comes in on this. So.
Okay. Well, I'd have to go back to when I was a licensed technician at a Ford dealership. Things were going quite well. It was in a very good time where I was... when I was working, it was flat rate, getting 10, 12 hours a day billed out, and sometimes 16, sometimes more. It was a very lucrative time. And I was looking at, what I was making. I was making pretty good money. But I thought, I think it's typical of a lot of shop owners when they look at what the business owner's making and they're thinking, wow, I should be able to do that. If I'm billing out 12 hours, they're billing out that plus all the extra. So, you know what? I think I can do that too. So I went on my own, started by myself, left my job on my own for maybe 2 months, and then I hired an apprentice. So I'm finding myself in the shop, working away, and not getting my 12 hours billed out. I'm not getting 10, not getting 8. I'm down to maybe 6 and realizing, well, what is going on here? Okay, now I'm answering the phones. Now I'm doing the billing. I'm finding myself with a lot of hats on, and I'm not making that 10 or 12 hours I was kind of thinking I would be. After a little while, I started billing out the 10 hours a day, but it cost me about 12 to 16 hours a day working just to make that. So I think at that time I started thinking, I should really look into some sort of coaching, some sort of guidance. So eventually I hooked up with RPM Training, but I went through several trainers, and all of them are good. I had lots to say good about all the training that I had and got something out of everything. So when I got hooked up with Murray, I was billing the 6 hours a day out for tech, and my bottom line wasn't that great. I'd be going on holidays when I could take holidays. I'd go on holidays and I'd be wondering about, is our bank draft or our overdraft going to be protecting us while we're gone on holiday? So got that in the back of my mind. So stuff like that, when you could take holidays, that is, it should seem to be far and few between. I'd be calling home around dinner time and saying, well, I'm not going to be home for supper. Well, what time do you want me to make a hold of your supper for you? I said, no, don't wait up for me. So anyway, I got talking with Murray, and we got some systems into place and procedures that we needed to do. And it wasn't overnight, obviously, and it took quite a few years to actually get to the point where I am. And I'm sure other shop owners would come along a lot quicker than I did. I was a little stubborn, holding out, and concerned about what I was billing out for hours and trying to do everything. So finally, I kind of let go maybe 3 years ago, and everything kind of skyrocketed from there. It's not just about the money with the coaching. It's basically a way of life. If you want to work 18 hours a day and call it a job, that's up to you. But for me, I was at a time where it's like, well, it's time that I actually live my life and have some time. And have some money, go on holidays, and thinking before I leave, got some extra money in the bank there. What should we invest that in? Should we get some equipment, or should I take it out and invest into something else? So the whole mindset kind of changed from having no money sitting in our account and worrying about getting maybe more overdraft, and going to where should I invest more equipment? Should we expand some more? Should we take some money out and reinvest that, like I was saying? So,
that's where
I basically come to at this point.
Right. So Murray, you know, when you hear Brad's story, retelling it, I mean, I'm sure you're remembering the first calls and, you know, when you first struck up this business relationship with Brad. It sounds like a kind of a common story, though, right?
Oh, it's 98.2% of a lot of independent shops, very similar story. And you know, to give Brad credit, the fact that he was doing six is pretty good. Most people can barely do 4.5 or 5 when they first start out on their own that way because of all the duties. And yeah, the 16, 18 hour days is huge. And, you know, we go way back, obviously, with all of this. And, but I have a memory of, it's that first service advisor is probably one of the biggest humps that a shop owner gets over, right, Brad? Whereas, you want me to spend what? $48,000 or whatever it was back then. They don't do anything. They don't generate any revenue. And getting that mindset of, well, they allow you to generate revenue and they cover the front. So that's one of the key things of that first stage of by yourself with an apprentice is that front person is just the wow, how could I afford that? And it literally pays for itself in a quick period of time. And maybe like Brad said, you might not take more money home. You might stay the same for the first 6 months or a year, but you can now go home for dinner right. and be with your kids. Right. So that would be one memory I would have of that, you know, part of Brad's journey. Right, Brad?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I thought the same way too, you know, getting a service advisor, that's crazy. That's more money. I don't have that money. But once you have an advisor and having the proper training and also doing the courses and training with you or whoever. Once that training is in place and procedures are set up, you know, you can leave when you need to leave. And you find that you're generating more income too as time goes and systems, procedures are, as long as they're followed, you do generate more money for sure and makes everything so much more smoother. And it's smoother on everybody from your suppliers that are getting the right calls for the right parts at the right time and to your techs, having their parts, having their jobs ready for them, their efficiency goes up, proficiency goes up. So it's, you just can't look at the cost of that particular wage. It's going to generate for you. And the busier you get, the more you're going to need on the front counter for sure. And the more you have on the front counter, the more management skills you need. And it's a snowball effect for sure.
Right. Now, Murray, you know, Brad started, you know, kind of recognized pretty early on that he should look for some information and advice and some help. But that's not always the case, is it?
No, it's not. There's this independent streak that technicians seem to have that creates a challenge for them to search out help and search out training, to even talk to other shop owners. I think Brad was probably, even maybe before we met or worked together, Brad, I think you were already talking to a couple of your peers in your marketplace, right, about best practices and things like that. But it's this streak. And my theory behind that stubborn streak is, you know, technicians go for training, they do their apprenticeship, they start working, but then they're constantly challenged by an advisor. Does it really need that? They're challenged by an owner. Did it really take that long? Why did you take so long? You know, they get challenged by the driving public. Maybe they, you know, they get challenged by customers saying you ripped me off or you did something I didn't do. So then technicians have to continuously battle to protect and defend the fact that yes, I made the right call, I made the right decision. And I think what ends up happening after 9-10 years of doing that, you're just like, the whole world's against me. Now a coach is going to tell me what to do, what to do. And I think the realization that most shop owners get to that get involved with training and coaching is they realize that we are, I think most of us anyways, are coming beside you. We're not trying to be antagonistic. We're not trying to say you're doing it wrong. That's a really big mistake for anybody to say to somebody is you're doing it wrong. I would never say that. I would say, hey, have you heard of this way of doing it? Or I've noticed one of the common things that works is stories about other shops. We love stories, right? So let me tell you about Susan and her shop in Saskatoon. And let me talk about John with his shop in a small town in Labrador. And you know, these different people that have done these, and then shop owners go, oh, that person did it in a small town in a big city. Oh, well, if that person could do it, then I can do it. And Brad referenced something about 3 years ago, making a mindset just to go all in with the processes and the systems and the coaching. And that takes time for somebody to get to that. I'm watching people as we work together, all of a sudden they get to this point where they're like, yeah, I'm going to trust the stuff and I'm just going to let it go. And it's not about so much Murray or the coach, but it's almost like just a mental place where they realize, yeah, I've gotten pretty big here and I need to trust the system and the people and the numbers. You know, and then of course the coaches are always there to catch you if you fall too far backwards or to hold your hand if you get too nervous. But man, I've really seen Brad in the 3 years. It just actually even grew more. When he decided to go all in, it actually went even bigger, which is just amazing to watch, right?
Yeah. Brad, Murray talked a little bit about trust, and you had mentioned that you were pretty stubborn. maybe didn't do some of those things that seemed like maybe might have been a good idea, but took a while for you to come around. When you think back at the things that, you know, maybe you were reluctant to try, what comes to mind?
Well, I think one of the biggest one is always everybody's concerned about their labor rate. I don't recall the last time somebody has asked me my labor rate, and we don't even show it on our invoicing. So that's a big one. And it's actually not that big of a deal. You have your labor rate, you can have your labor rate at $120 an hour, but if you're only billing out 4 hours a day for a tech, as opposed to, let's say, 7 or 8 at even at 115, you're so far more ahead that way. So I guess the focus came off of, you know, worrying about what our door rate should be. It's more behind the scenes behind that, looking at why we're not billing out the hours that we should be and honest hours, and just being more efficient. And I mean efficient out on the front counter. I think the techs, another shop owner I know quite well, he mentioned to me, he says, you know what, we do not have better techs than you. They're generally all about the same. It's how you process, you know, your procedures and how you present everything to the techs, how they're going to, how they're working. Your efficiency goes up on the front, that's going to go up in the back end. So it's not always the techs that are at fault, you know, at times, sure they are, but for the most part, I think 90% of the problems of those hours getting invoiced out correctly and parts being, well, that's nothing to do with techs, but parts need to be invoiced at the proper margin. Gross profit margins. So that's on the front half, and that comes right down to the owner. So I think the onus is on them for sure.
So Murray, this is, I'm going to ask you this question because I don't want to put Brad on the spot for it, but you know, often, you know, one of the impetuses for getting involved in this and getting some systems in place, and you mentioned quality of life and being able to go home for dinner and in your experience, how much of the impetus for whether it's going all in or starting down the road to getting, you know, systems in place, getting a more realistic, sustainable work-life situation comes from home?
You know, that's an interesting question. And I don't know if I've actually thought it in terms of how you phrased that. I would say the feedback that I have got from home when I've met the other half, at times, because back in the day we used to meet, you know, in live settings and sometimes go to conferences, and then I would meet my clients at part supplier conferences and I'd be speaking somewhere and then I'd get to meet, you know, their spouses and stuff like that. They didn't talk so much about that, but what they said, that the owner was calmer, that the owner was happier, the owner enjoyed going to work, and they were less negative. So that's the feedback I've gotten. It's actually making me kind of emotional because I've actually had emails from spouses, you know, saying thank you because of what that has accomplished in that person's life, right? So that's the feedback I've received is more of a calmness, enjoying their work, We're all different. Personalities are different, right? Some of us always bring our work home no matter what. Other ones, we are finally able to leave it at work. But just that calmness and confidence, right? That everything's going to be okay. And even in the case of people that work together, like many times it's a common thing where, you know, male shop owner, female spouse becomes the bookkeeper to save money. Some of them are naturals. They're good at it. Some of them hate it, absolutely detest it, and love it when I suggest that maybe we should just hire a bookkeeper and let that person go do what they're actually good at and what they love. But helping them with calming themselves with the numbers and understanding the numbers, they're entering them and they're processing them. They see the bank accounts, but they don't always understand the reporting, right? Really common question I have got from bookkeeper spouses is, you know, accountants said we made more money. You say we made more money. You say we had the best year ever. But when I look in the bank account, I don't see the money. Right. And I say, well, let's go take a look at your balance sheet. And usually the male spouse, the husband's bought $100,000 worth of equipment because he finally could. And that's why the bank account is where it is. And I said, see, here's where the money is. And of course, that makes an interesting conversation between the two of them about how maybe we should talk about retained earnings and budgeting and forecasting. Now, this is generic. Brad, you know, I'm not that aware of Brad's relationship with his bookkeeper. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I've never really talked to her that much, right? But one more point on that is I always tell them that I don't do marriage counseling at the outset of that coaching relationship. As soon as we get to that, I step back.
Right. You sort of alluded to it, Brad, a little bit. You said, you know, it's not just about the money, you know, it's about being able to go home. It's being able to have a vacation and all that. But, you know, is what Murray's saying about, you know, your kind of demeanor and how you feel about the business you know, maybe not questioning, you know, was this the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life kind of thing? Is this part of what you've been able to put in place through, you know, some decent coaching and getting those systems in place?
Oh, for sure. I know when I first started off with, on my own, you know, a few months in, you know, we were busy and I kind of questioned it. And I was like, wow, this is a huge leap. Should I have done this, right? So, years later, and I should have taken some proper coaching right off the bat and have been probably been retired by now, but I didn't. But getting that coaching has increased my quality of life for sure. And now there's certainly more room for improvements, and I'm still ongoing with our coaching. And I'm sure Murray will tell you too, there's always room for improvements. You got to keep working on it. So, I'm happy to go into work. I am hiring another advisor to take more burden off of me, and I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm really looking forward to hopefully taking Fridays off. And I've been talking to Murray about that for a couple of years now. So has been a short-term goal that's turned into a bit longer than I wanted to, but with situations that are happening and with COVID and finding employees right now, which everybody's, I'm sure, aware of with employees. So I think we have got our employee situation really good now. So I'm really looking forward to having more time off than what I have been taking. So I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Well, that's awesome, Brad. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you came around, right? I mean, but you had an idea that you needed some outside information. That's probably the first important step, even before kind of connecting with Murray, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. You have to have some trust in your coaching for sure. And once you have that trust and just kind of let it go and work with your coach and follow the advice and procedures that are already been proven elsewhere. Once that's in place, things slowly come into place and starts working out. So it may take, sometimes it takes, it'll turn over, you know, in the next month and your next income statement, you're checking on your previous month. It may take 6 months before you see some of those improvements, but everything has come around that I've tried. So I'm happy with that.
Right. Is that sound about right, Murray? You know, get things going, and it's a process. It's a journey, right?
It's a journey. Hence the my background. Road, right? And of course, a couple of my current clients, when they saw this new picture I put up, said, "Where's the cars that have gone over the cliff and the fires?" They were looking for some of what they've been experiencing. And it is three steps forward, two steps back sometimes. And it isn't always the owner of the shop. It's circumstances of life. It's employee challenges. It's, you know, a highway gets closed near them or temporarily closed. The pandemic comes along. And we learn to face the things that we can control, which is one of my mantras: face what you can control so that you can deal with what you can, right? And, you know, got a guy with a closed road coming up soon in near Victoria, BC. And I said, start a marketing campaign on social media, Instagram now. Talk about how excited you are going to be for the new road and the new sidewalks. Talks positively, and then post maps about how people can still get to their shop. Start now before the construction even stops. Whereas a lot of shop owners in the past would have been, blah, 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 the road's going to be closed, you know, I'm going to go broke and that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
But the other thing I was going to say is the best source of clients that I get and the other coaches that I know get is from other shop owners when they talk to each other. Daytona 500 just happened. Some of my clients were down there, and I've had three phone calls from Daytona from shops that met shops there because they believe the shop owner. That they don't believe me. They don't even know me. Who's this Murray guy, right? But they believe other shop owners. And, you know, I do wanted to just touch on two more things. That one that I'm so happy, like, for Brad and many of his peers, and that breaks my heart. I've got another client in Alberta who has approached a young shop owner that's just opened up in his town. Like, literally, he's approached a competitor and told them, go get some help. You know, the kids opened up $65 an hour, like half the rate of the town. And no, you guys can't tell me what to do. You guys are all ripping off the customers and all that kind of stuff. You know, we're all predicting, we're all taking bets, actually sad, taking bets on how long he's open, right?
Right.
His peers. But on the flip side, Brad has created careers for a lot of people. Right. He's big. He's got a lot of employees and advisors and stuff. And the pride and the legacy that these shop owners create by the employment that they create, great careers. You know, people can have, well, buy homes and have mortgages and have children based on a salary in this industry. Right. And I think Brad and some of his other peers can be very proud of that, and trying to get that young guy in Alberta to realize what he could become and what he could do, as opposed to this small, you know, I'm going to steal all your business with a cheaper rate,
right?
Attitude, right? That you guys are all, and has never done the math on how to actually calculate what a service rate should be, right? So I kind of bounced around there a little bit, Andrew, but I think I answered the question.
I think so. But I think, to me, it's not a bad point to end on for everybody out there. And thank you, Brad, and thank you, Murray, is, you know, that a well-run operation is a really significant contributor to the community in a lot of ways. One, you know, you're going to be able to provide great service more capably for the clientele, because you're organized, you're able to provide excellent service in a way that minimizes the friction with the service facility. But also, as Murray mentioned, you know, you're able to pay your people properly. They can have, you know, better lives. We can help out in our communities. And, you know, whether it's the owners or staff are able to have organized lives, contribute to their communities in their other activities, as well as, you know, take, obviously, vacations when it makes sense to take vacations, not just when there's a gap and all this kind of stuff. And that's all a good thing. And it all starts with looking outside and getting some good advice and some good systems in place. So thank you, Brad. Thank you, Murray. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And we'll catch you the next time.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Murray.
Listening to the Great Canadian Aftermarket Podcast, brought to you by the publishers of Indie Garage and Jobber Nation. Connect with us online at indiegarage.ca and jobbernation.ca, a brand of Chat Integrated Media.